My fellow Americans, our long national nightmare is over. Our country.
Sugar and spice. I feel nice. A sugar and spice. So nice, so nice. I got you.
Well, good afternoon. Welcome to the Mel and Floyd Summer Replacement Show. I'm Mel. Floyd is on assignment, but with us, as always, the man who knows everything, Mr. Smarty Pants.
Thanks for that little trip down memory lane there with President Gerald R. Ford.
Right. Well, we used to start the show with that all the time. We had some requests to bring it back.
So. Long national nightmare is finally over. Yeah, you know, it makes makes Nixon look like a piker when you start hearing more and more about Trump's machinations behind the scene. Or Giuliani or whoever was the quote-unquote mastermind.
Yeah.
Yeah, so. Well,
mastermind.
Yeah. I mean, Nixon was just trying to, like, mess up things by, you know, usual dirty tricks.
Right.
Yeah. Finding out what the other side was doing and things like that.
Yeah.
But not quite as audacious as sending out their own list of electors, you know. Even the dear leader, Richard Nixon, couldn't come up with that one.
Or telling the Secretary of State of Georgia, find me some votes.
Find me some votes, that's right.
That's right out of Stalin's playbook. Seriously. Yeah. And he said it doesn't matter who votes, it's who counts the votes.
Yeah, that's exactly right.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's their motto now. That's the GOP motto.
Yeah. And so he had a lot of good ideas at Stalin.
He just took them a little too far.
Exactly. My mother once said, I think I told you that story before. My mother once said, it takes all kinds to make a world, but there's a few kinds we could do without. And I said, oh, that sounds like something Joe Stalin would say. And she said that Joe Stalin, he had a lot of good ideas. Okie dokie. Of course, my mother was in favor of collectivization of agriculture. So, you know, what can I say?
Oh, funny. that reminds me, our little conversation reminds me of this little news nugget. The Republican committee that helps elect secretaries of state who control elections across the country at the state level raised $33 million in 2021.
Wow.
The equivalent Democratic committee raised $1 million.
You know, you got to admire restless evil. You really do, because it's so motivated and it's so clear, right? I mean, back in the 80s and 90s, the right wing, they were busy putting people on school boards across the country because they knew that was important.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the only reason probably Trump even managed to get their support he did when he was president is because he was going to basically flood the entire court system with right wing appointees. I mean, those are important positions.
Right.
And this idea of like, okay, secretaries of state, these guys are gals are pivotal. Let's totally put some money into taking over that part of things. You know? I mean,
well, it's like they did about.
You got to admire the efficiency there.
I'm
sure.
Like 10 or 15 years ago when they realized it was easier to buy a couple of state Supreme Court justices than to mess around with like a legislature and a governor and stuff.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, those are cheap. I mean, people don't vote in those elections.
Right.
And, you know, you can turn a couple hundred votes and you can have your candidate.
Right. And especially with stuff like judges, it's so easy to create really, I guess you could say, emotional campaigns because, you know, crime, people worry, there's fear out there, sometimes unjustified, sometimes not so much.
And it's really easy if you have somebody with a history of being on the bench.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes they have to make difficult decisions. Sometimes they're nuanced decisions.
Yeah.
I mean, maybe they have to you know, throw out a conviction because of, you know, something that was legitimate.
Right.
A legitimate
part of our legal structure.
Yeah.
But part of our constitution or something like that.
But you can make a 27 second attack ad that says, oh, so-and-so is soft on crime.
Right.
And they turn this rapist loose and this murderer. Yeah. And if you want more rapists and murderers loose, vote for, you know, so-and-so.
Hear, hear.
Wait a minute. No, we got that
I do.
Wrong.
But then on the other hand, you know, they get elected and it's a sad old story. You know, what's the matter with Kansas? I mean, these people get in there, and then basically they spend 90% of their time helping out the corporate elites. Well, I mean, exactly. that's the whole idea behind it.
Yeah, so. it's sleight of hand. It's you know,
look over here.
Yeah, nothing in
bright shiny object. By the way, I don't know if you've speaking of the Republicans and their insidious and restless evil. I don't know if you heard about this, but there's a new proposal down in Florida, where everybody's favorite governor, Ron DeSantis, of course, dwells in the Dark Tower. And he's asked the state legislature just last week for $5.7 million. And he needs that money because he wants to create a special 52-person election crimes and security force in the Secretary of State's office. In other words, he wants to create election police. And the plan, which he's been working on this since the fall. Okay, so this is nothing new. It's all in process. It's going to include 20 sworn police officers and field offices, and so. But not to be outdone, David Perdue. Remember, he was the senator who's now running for governor of Georgia. He says he's going to do that too. His claim is he's going to make Georgia elections the safest and most secure in the country. And you know how he's going to do that? He's going to make sure nobody votes. One way to stop all this voting fraud is
there was no fraud in this election.
There's zero fraud. Yes, exactly.
Wow. So what would election police do?
I don't know. There's a supporter of Trump in Arizona, state senator there's Wendy Rogers. She says she would like to start a Bureau of Elections with the power to subpoena witnesses and impound election equipment. That's impounding election equipment is what we're looking at there. So imagine that. You said, well, the election must be fraudulent. So let's just take the voting machines and stick them in this warehouse where nothing bad could possibly happen to
and
them.
We'll do a little
and
recount.
We'll do a look at it and do a little checking it out there. So that might be something they could do. They would scare away people, especially if you're concerned about
that's always a big
the
one.
Violence associated with law enforcement in the United States. Yeah. And then you could do things like, again, you know, we got to put this election machine here in this warehouse along with all the marijuana we've seized. So.
Yeah. Most of it. Some of it.
So whatever, you know, this is.
Well, that's the thing. I mean, you know, you come up with something that vague and then it seeks its own purpose.
Exactly. I got it. We got to use it.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
What are you going to do with it?
It's like when we militarized all the police since 9/11. You know?
Yeah. This tank is just sitting there gathering rust.
Monticello or something.
Right, right.
And so you use it to run over.
Taser won't use itself.
Jaywalkers or something. But if DeSantis is going to have 52 of them, they should all be they should make them like a deck of cards.
Yeah.
They could each have a different, you know, Jack of Hearts and the Two of Diamonds.
It's very comic booky of you.
Yeah, exactly. It'd be fun. Make it fun at least. The uniforms can be kind of like cards, kind of like little.
There you
little,
go.
Little like the billboard signs.
Hey, two of spades, signs. Get over here.
Yeah, exactly. I should have set the seven of hearts.
Yeah, exactly.
Send a two of spades to do a seven of hearts job.
There you go.
So, well, another Florida bill would prohibit public schools and private businesses from making white people feel discomfort when they eat food that's too spicy.
Damn the spicy food.
This mayonnaise has really got a kick to it. No, when they feel discomfort when they teach students or train employees about discrimination in the nation's past. Received its first preliminary approval Tuesday.
You know, I have to say, the unerring way in which everything the right does is a funhouse mirror of the stuff they complain about is fascinating. I mean, what did they talk about? The snowflakes and people who were whiners and all this stuff. And then what are they doing? Importing this concept into their own white supremacy viewpoint? I mean, like, we're the biggest whiners. Come on. We're really upset. Oh, please. Oh, no. Like, buck up, little buckaroos. Come on.
Discomfort, talking about slavery. Yeah. It's like, oh, we don't want you to feel bad about that.
Oh, wow.
You know, you should be able to teach history, like, with facts and the way it happened.
Sure.
And, you know, I mean, and you don't have to, like, sensationalize it or anything. You can just say what happened, and people can figure that out. You know, yeah. Oh, that wasn't good. You know.
Yeah, and there's a distinction between, you know, saying something is a structural or a societal issue. It's a matter of like political science and sociology and history, and saying you personally are responsible. I mean, maybe you personally should be aware and try to do something about it, but it doesn't make you, in a sense, culpable.
Right.
Group guilt is not necessarily part of this.
Yeah. I mean, realistically, this country was built on slavery and genocide.
You're making me feel really bad when you say that.
We can acknowledge that. But don't feel bad about it.
Well, I mean, feel appropriately motivated. No. I mean, I don't know. I mean, it's sort of like... And there's residual elements of that in society wherever we look.
And resolve to do better. We can be better than that if we try.
Don't point out my flaws. What's the matter with you? I want you to smooch my big white ass. Come on.
The greatest country in the world and always have been and never did anything wrong.
I have to tell you, so every now and then, you know, I like to keep my hand in and see what, you know, the political right is doing. And there is one commentator that I just share with people that I sometimes will read her essays. This woman, Heather McDonald, she works for Manhattan Institute, and you see her around and so on. And I see her as kind of a bellwether because she's really right wing, but on the other hand, she's not completely like, you know, in the Trump band or whatever.
Not so crazy.
So I saw her talking with talking on a podcast recently, and she, I was kind of amused by the whole thing. I thought, oh, Heather, you darling thing. She said, I've started reading this is going to freak people out at home, but I got to tell it. She said, I've started reading stuff by, like, you know, Malcolm X and Frederick Douglass and stuff like that. And it's like, people were mean to black people, you know. It's like, oh, Heather, aren't you adorable? But I mean, it's like, even somebody like that, if they just sit down and I'm like, you know, hey, W.E. Du Bois, maybe you should read some of that, you know. And
I'm hearing a lot more about that Frederick Douglass.
His star is definitely rising.
We're trying to get him on the show for quite a while, but not returning our calls.
But it's you know, that's the right response, right? It's like, hey, just, you know, read some of this stuff, educate yourself, see what it's like. Read some great novels that have been written in the 20th century, blah, blah, blah. That's all you need to do. But, well, not all you need to do, but I mean, in order to get educated about how people might feel. So
it's a start, you know?
Yeah.
It's
like, But yeah, I just, don't
wow,
don't make me feel bad. Don't make me feel bad.
Mitch McConnell this week was talking about concerns about that voters of color have about voting, and and he was poo-pooing that. He poo-poos a lot of things, but
it usually takes him
longer nowadays. But he was poo-pooing that. He said the concern is misplaced.
Sure.
Because if you look at the statistics, African American voters are voting in just as high a percentage as Americans.
Well, here's the thing I feel about stuff like that. Nothing should have to be heroic. Do you know what I mean? Like,
the key there was that he didn't consider African Americans Americans.
Yeah,
he just considered Americans like the default for people.
But I'm just saying, in terms of like what he's trying to say, is that it's not, you know, there's been heroic.
We're not trying hard enough.
There's been heroic voter drives that and some pretty horrid candidates you might want to organize around or organize against. You know, so
Yeah, you know, these people, they're happy to wait in line for 4 hours at the one station we have open. And
again, nothing should have to be heroic.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, they were doing that in the Madison when they were screwing around with the voter IDs. They said, well, you can get them at the DOT, and then they, like, moved the DOT stations, you know, off the bus lines.
Right,
because we didn't want, you know, people riding the bus to go out and get their IDs.
Right.
And,
China's economy is slowing down right now.
It is.
Yeah. Construction and property sales have slumped. And China's National Bureau of Statistics said on Monday this week, that economic output was only 4% higher than during the same period a year ago. We would love to have that in the United States. But no, it's a deceleration from their almost 5% growth that they've had. And so people are worrying what that means about the world economy. So now it used to be the United States sneezed, everybody else got a cold, right? But now it's China, apparently. So,
but the air will get cleaner now. So.
Yeah, that's a very good point.
It's It's always a balancing act.
It really is.
We can have, economic growth or breathable air.
Yeah, one or the other. Mm. By the way, Exxon this week, I don't know if you heard about this, they set a climate goal. That's right.
To have a climate?
Yeah, they said, well, we want one. They said they have an ambition. I love this. They didn't say exactly what was the goal. They said it was an ambition to reach zero net greenhouse gas emissions from its operations by 2050.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's comfortably out there. By 2050, of course, there'll be icebergs living in Florida or polar bears living in Florida. Oil company's the largest in the United States, and it identified 150 modifications to its exploration and production practices. And one of the things they say they're going to eliminate flaring and venting of methane. I try to prevent that too, but I'm not very successful. A byproduct of drilling that is a powerful greenhouse gas. So what do we think about that?
I think it's
PR,
corporate fig leaves, and
I think they're releasing a lot of methane just talking about it.
Yeah, this is gonna get. We're gonna be better in 30 years.
Yeah, it sounds like a major methane release to me.
Okay, so this professor of legal studies and business ethics at Wharton, a woman named Nina Strominger.
Okay.
She asked Wharton students what they thought the average American worker makes per year.
Oh, Lord.
25% of them thought it was over six figures. One of them thought it was $800,000.
Yeah.
Of course, the real number is about $45,000.
Right, right. So. This is you need some information, maybe. Did she edumacate them on what the actual numbers were?
I would hope she followed up on that.
Yeah. Wow. Well, what's wrong with those people? Why don't they get better paying jobs?
These are the people who are going to come out of school and get like the top management jobs at the top businesses and then make the decisions. And
I got to tell you, I was really amused by this story. I don't know if you've heard about this, but Donald J. Trump, you may have heard that name.
Yeah.
He's trying to start a social media company, that...
Oh, he's still doing that?
Yeah, he's still involved, but it's not really getting anywhere. So the company's called Trump Media and Technology Group, and they approached dozens of investors pitching the deal. They actually got... they lined up 36 investors. And they haven't really been able to get any money. They want to get about $1 billion to start, but they've only raised about $300 million so far. And the reason why, it turns out, is that some of the people that are involved in like hedge funds and investment firms and stuff were really hesitant to go into business with Mr. Trump. And it was a combination of reasons, according to some interviews that have been done. And some of them, they just don't want to risk alienating their investors. Because, a lot of these investment companies and hedge funds and stuff, I mean, they include public pensions funds and foundations like that are going to be really wary of the former president. And then what really amused me was people are actually paying attention to his business transactions. And of course, we're going to find out more of those as time goes on. But I mean, he's had corporate bankruptcies and disputes with lenders and partners as long as he's been in business. And of course, he's had some spectacular, flameouts and failures, including Trump University and his own, charity, which had to be disbanded and so on. So they're just kind of like, I don't think he's a trustworthy business partner. So.
Yeah.
So good luck on that, dude.
Well, plus, I think he thinks to start a social media company, you just declare it. I declare bankruptcy or something.
But all he ever does is put his name on things anyway.
Yeah, so. I mean, it's like, here, you go do that now. Yeah. And of course, he's not going to pay anybody or hire anybody who knows what they're doing. Right. So it's just going to be, and they think they can just sign up the rubes.
Yeah.
And they will initially and then fleece them real quickly, but they aren't going to have like their own version of Facebook that's going to amount to anything, or Twitter. I think that's the goal. That's if they have such a thing as a goal, that's kind of like the pitch to the rubes.
Right.
It's like, Twitter's they're liberal, so we're gonna.
Well, it's it's motivated by spite more than anything else.
Well, I can't get on anywhere else.
Right.
Plus, he has a history of not paying his bills.
Well, there you go. So, yeah. I mean, you know. Disputes with lenders. That's a big part of it.
Yeah. The biggest banks on Wall Street are worried that your pay raise could be bad for the economy.
Of course. Their pay raise is not.
No.
Yeah, that's a totally different thing.
That's incentive yeah, to get the best and the brightest. Right. Like those guys.
Do they not understand how economies work? I mean, if nobody's coming to those jobs, you got to pay whatever you got to pay to get them there.
That's
right?
Like the thing you learned the first day in econ class in high school. You know, it's like. Yeah. Supply and demand.
Well, it's mercy for my friends and justice for my enemies. Yeah. So, yeah.
The Goldman Sachs CEO says labor costs are up everywhere. Labor costs.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, not wages. And economists worry that sticky pay hikes, they always have these wonderful little words, too. Sticky pay hikes.
Euphemisms, yes. You know, unpleasant euphemisms.
Like when the stock market crashes, it's a correction. Sticky pay hikes are part of an inflation that could spiral out of control.
Oh, harsh.
And ruin the economy.
Oh, heavens
above.
So
quit paying all those people all that money, all that's $14, $15 an hour.
How did those economies where they actually pay people reasonable wages manage to survive?
Like you mean in a
like
lot of
Germany,
the,
for
lot of
example.
Rest, like
yeah.
Europe.
And yeah, right. Those backward countries that are so impoverished. Speaking of other things economic, I don't know if you've heard about this, but airlines have been doing a little poorly, and information just came out this week that American Airlines in particular lost $931 million in the last 3 months of last year. And they've been doing better, you know, because, of course, things have been a little rough recently for some unknown reason with respect to travel. But the biggest problem they had in the last 3 months, of course, is so many airline workers had to call in sick.
Right.
And that was... compounded that the problem was winter storms, and which led to thousands of cancellations and so on. I'm just amazed that Companion and I managed to make it all the way to Hawaii and back.
Yeah.
Which is kind of the luck of the dumb, I guess. Like, whoop-de-doop-de-doop, you know?
Did you hold your breath the whole way? Or
yeah,
what?
I was talking to Companion about it. He said, you remember those Mr. Magoo cartoons where he even, like, couldn't see anything, but he always inerringly walked the right path, you know? Just like by accident.
It's kind
of, I think that's what we did.
Plus, you carried an aqua lung with you everywhere you went.
There was that.
Well, once you get to Hawaii, it's okay because they're really strict there.
Yeah,
you know. So
yeah,
but the actual getting there in that big tube that scoots you there. That's probably the biggest thing.
Although it wasn't again. I don't think the flights weren't that packed either. So that was kind of nice.
Oh, that's helpful.
Yeah. But Hawaii is really good about that. They have a site you have to go to and you have to present information about your, you know, when you were vaccinated and boosted and all this other stuff. Mm-hmm. They just don't want anybody.
Did you scream and hold your breath and turn blue because they wanted information from you like that?
No.
This is America, damn it.
Yeah, it is. Where we all should kind of pull together, maybe.
A friend's wife who's not quite the sharpest tool in the drawer. So yeah. I'll be nice. And well, that wasn't very nice. But
nice
as I can be with her.
I guess it all depends on what you would have said if you hadn't been nice.
She went to Hawaii one time and she was telling me about how the locals don't like tourists don't like the visitors.
That's
and she said
true everywhere.
She said, yeah, they don't like the Americans there.
Oh yeah. Get that.
Okay. Thanks, Mitch McConnell.
I was talking to Chris before the show. One thing that was nice when we were there is we were at a beach in Kauai called Poipu Beach, and I get to say pretty much every white person you see in Hawaii is an old hippie, right? Okay, so that's just the way it is.
Sure,
and that's fine. But there was a little impromptu bluegrass band that got started. There was just there was a. Again, you know, relatively elderly gentleman, and there was one woman as well playing the mandolin. So the woman playing the mandolin, and there was a guy playing the guitar, and a banjo player and a fiddle player, and they just started playing. You know, they were there, and they got together, and it was quite delightful. It was sort of,
oh, that's really cool.
Yeah, you're sitting there on the beach, looking at my binoculars, looking for whales breaching, and and listening to bluegrass music being performed by. Nice little impromptu amateur
old hippies,
band. Yeah, old hippies. It was nice. I feel very blessed that I'm able to do things like that. It was nice because I walk out of, waiting for the bus today to come here, and I'm like, Jesus, it's cold. Why do I live here?
Jack Nicholson from The Shining is standing right next to you there with the icicles on his nose. Here's a little analysis someone did. Those least likely to worry about getting COVID, and he's put in parentheses, Republicans, have been those most likely to get COVID.
Yeah, there seems to be a tie in there. What me worry?
that's the title I put on, this little slug I put on that when I sent it to myself.
Ishkabibble, yes, right.
Did you like that old Superman cover I sent you a while ago where they had like Superman and it was one of his annuals where he's in different like old man Superman.
Oh yeah, that was so weird.
But then there was one where he looked like Alfred E. Newman.
Yes. Yeah. The idiot Superman or something like that. Yeah. You know, I think they had to do that because he's invulnerable, right? So there's something about
that. You gotta mess with him.
Yeah, you gotta mess with him. Yeah, you gotta. It's kind of like, oh, well, here's a weird.
Turn him into a chicken.
That was the whole red kryptonite idea. And back in the old Superman comics, they had to introduce something that would make him, accessible, I guess, by being vulnerable. Yeah. Something bad would happen.
That's hard. I mean, he's pretty godlike. I mean, that's kind of like in those recent movies, he's very godlike. And it's,
yeah, and annoyingly so. I watched, what was that movie? Man of Steel. It came out about almost 10 years ago now.
Yeah.
And that was, they were playing that part of it up, and I thought,
That was almost like a Jesus metaphor, wasn't that one?
Yes. Yeah. And they weren't subtle about it either. There's one scene where he's talking to a pastor in the church about how he has to fight General Zod, and in the background, there's a stained glass window with Jesus in Gethsemane, and I'm like, okay, do you want to take out the 2x4 and just whack me with it a few times while you're at it? I mean... But that's, I mean, here's the thing. So you and I are, we're old dudes and we loved comics when we were kids. But that was because it was like a gritty sort of counterculture thing that teenagers and younger tweeners, as we now call them, would get into that were boys. I mean, it was like totally, but now the whole culture is colonized by this. It feels weird.
Yeah, it really does. Yeah.
It's kind of like, I mean, things that I thought were cute and kind of nostalgic are now like major financial vehicles, basically, and ways of interpreting who we are and major draws in terms of media and entertainment.
Well, and there's all this interest about, who's going to play this person? Who's going to play? Oh, they leaked the trailer. Oh, look at that costume. I mean, it's like...
I'm starting to feel a real identification with Frederick Wortham, Frederick Wortham was the famous psychiatrist who said comic books are bad for kids. And this guy was a socialist. He was originally from Germany. He worked in a psychiatric clinic in Harlem. He wanted to work with young men of color to try to figure out, how racism affects them in society and the psychiatric problems that come from that and so on. I mean, he was a real progressive, very positive kind of guy. And he said, these comic book things are just basically beautifully done, paeons to fascism because how you answer all the problems is punch somebody in the face, And then there's this excessive adulation of the invulnerable male body and all these tropes that you see in fascism. And so that was why he was so upset about this. And I'm starting to think, maybe he's onto something. There's something going on there. The guy's probably right.
Bring back the talking animals.
Yeah, come on. Yeah.
But even now the talking animals have to have like a rocket gun, like the raccoon thing.
That's right.
Anyway.
There's your in-depth cultural analysis right there.
Yeah.
We had to do one of those every program, I think.
Right, exactly.
Hey, top federal antitrust officials this week on Tuesday announced a review of how they approve mergers and acquisitions. Lena Khan is the chair of the Federal Trade Commission, and a man by the name of Jonathan Cantor, he's the head of antitrust at the Justice Department, said they wanted to rewrite the merger guidelines because they think they don't really address unique problems that are raised by contemporary industrial mergers, mainly the tech industry. So the review is going to focus on how the merger review process is applied to free services, such as those that are available through Google and Facebook. And the problem is that right now, they have what I would think of as a kind of regressive model. It's a consumer model. They talk about price increases and things like that, but it doesn't really talk about issues about power, corporate power with respect to certain kinds of goods and services. So, which, of course, originally, when you think about the original antitrust legislation, that's what it was about.
Mm-hmm.
So here's something that's going on, I guess you could say, in the Biden administration that does make a difference. It's not flashy. It's not up there in lights. But they're trying to basically do something to make sure that we have more issues with antitrust and concern about corporate acquisitions and mergers. And that's a good thing.
Hey, you're listening to the Mel and Floyd Show here on WORT 89.9 on the FM. You might be listening on the internet at WORTFM.org because we stream all of our programming there live. And then also we have the archives page. You can download and listen to shows pretty much whenever you want. The music shows stay for a couple weeks. The talkie talk shows stay 6 weeks, 8 weeks. I don't know. Until they start to stink. Until
right.
Somebody remembers to clean them out. It's like the office fridge, you know. It's like every once in a while you put up a sign saying, everything's going to go Friday, so take it if you want.
They open up a little container and we're talking about Ralph Nader or something. Yeah. And they're like, oh, close that up. Throw it out.
Throw that one out.
What's that? What's going on there?
And also we're available through iTunes, Spotify, and pretty much everywhere you can get your podcast and get them in a pod situation. Thanks to Mindless Mini D-Cubed, who does all the file management for those things. So,
yeah.
Again, as I am wont to do, I encourage you to get the WRT app. It makes things, it's really easy then to listen to archives and listen to live, and then it's free.
I was just in one of the official WRT bathrooms, and I saw a poster on the wall. If you pledge, remember, we still have those wonderful airline-like tote bags. If you want to pledge, you can pledge to the station at any time. You know, we're not in any of our pledge drives right now, but we always are accepting pledges, of course, because this is a community-supported radio station, and you, the listener, are the backbone of everything we do. But we still have a lot of those wonderful tote bags. I have one at home, and I just love it. So if you... you want to make a pledge to the station, just call down here 256-2001 at some time and talk to somebody here, and I'm sure be happy to take your dough. And we have things to treat you with as a result. So
you can do your 1960s stewardess cosplay. There.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. The mini dress is the best part.
Yeah. And the beehive hairdo. All right, we're going to take a break, play some announcements, and come back with...
The oral plug.
Sounds useful. I'll take two.
Get past the people, get past the hitman.
And we're back.
So I want to thank Mindless Minion Bob K, who sent me a story, and I don't have the story right in front of me, but the story was it was really funny. It was both like wow and ick at the same time. It was a story about the larger of the whales, including of course the great blue whale. You know, their whole way of eating is basically they go through the ocean and they just take in huge amounts of material and they expel it out.
Yeah, they're like a screen door.
Exactly. Yeah. Well, it turns out, how is it that they don't basically kind of suffocate from all the...
Yeah.
Well, they've got something in the back of their throat that scientists just recently discovered called an oral plug, where they can just kind of like plug the back of their throat, let all that stuff flying through... strain it out because, of course, they don't want all the ocean water. They want the little goodies that are
right,
in there.
Right.
Strain it out with their baleen, and then they can open the little plug in the back of their throat and let all the yummies come in.
Yeah, like little wooden boys.
Exactly. <Yeah. laughs> Exactly. So I got to say that he was speculating what this... asking questions about what this meant about the argument from design, you know, like, it's like, you know, God is making this creature that basically eats by inhaling half the ocean, right? And then it's like, oh, wait, that's going to kill the thing. So I better also have this little, like, stopper in the back of its throat. It seems like a funny way to create
that
an animal.
That was like a Friday afternoon design.
He's having some beers with Satan.
We're
and
going
like,
to
whatever.
Happy hour. Yeah, it's like, yeah. Satan goes, you know that's going to kill that thing.
Oh, yeah, duh.
Oh, damn it. Here, I'll put a stopper back here.
So thank you, Mindless Minion
that's
Bob
nice.
K. Appreciate
that's nice.
That.
I like that. So. Missouri State Police sent out an alert this week to the whole state. So it accidentally sent out an emergency alert for the Joker's car in Gotham City.
All right.
They sent out an emergency alert for Gotham City, Missouri. Purple green 1978 Dodge.
If I was a Joker, that's what I'd drive.
It's got to be purple. I mean. So no, it was like a little training thing that they didn't mean to send that out. But
oh,
really? So they accidentally sent that
see
out.
See if anybody's paying attention.
Yeah, maybe. Yeah. Of course, some poor sucker and is driving a green purple Dodge 78 Dodge. And they're beating the crap out of him.
Yikes. Here in Wisconsin, I just want to let you know that, currently a Wisconsin resident needs to be 21 years of age before they can apply for a concealed carry permit. But the GOP is not happy with that. The grand old party.
Drop it to 3.
Yep, not till you're 10, son.
Yep.
No, they're going to lower it to 18.
Of course.
So the measure's sponsor, Representative Shay Sortwell, Republican Two Rivers, said that 18-year-olds have the right to vote or to go to war, so they should have also the right to carry a concealed weapon. It is our obligation as the state legislature under our oath to the Constitution of the United States and oath to the state constitution to ensure equality before the law. Okay, great. I see no problem whatsoever with this proposal. Absolutely none.
A few years ago, I interviewed somebody who was working in the state office that issues those permits.
Yeah,
and for a job in my office, and kind of liked him. I thought he did a good interview and everything, and so we did a background check on him.
Yeah,
because we had to do background checks on everybody because we dealt with a lot of sensitive information and. And it turned out he was wanted for a felony in Florida for, like, financial crimes.
Oh.
But he got hired over there
to
issue permits. It's like they didn't bother to even do a background check on him. I mean, it took, like, 30 seconds for this red flag to pop up and say, no. So that gave me a lot of confidence in the system we got over there.
Yeah.
Eric Trump invoked his Fifth Amendment right against incriminating himself more than 500 times during a six-hour deposition with the New York Attorney General's office.
He should have said he didn't remember. Everyone would believe that.
Yeah, it's like, I don't know those words.
What?
He's pretty much like the little Wiggum boy from The Simpsons.
Right.
I mean, he could get away with anything. So, no, he said 500 times he took the Fifth because... He says, he and his family have nothing to hide, but...
Daddy will beat me if I say anything.
500 times.
Well, there you go. Asked a lot of questions.
I guess, yeah.
Hey, Jon Stewart is... remember Jon Stewart?
Yeah.
It's that Daily Show guy. He's going to be... apparently, he's in line to win an award. The John F. Kennedy Center for the Performing Arts announced this week that it's going to recognize Stewart's political satire with a Mark Twain Prize for American Humor.
It's
the 23rd annual award of this particular prize, and it honors people who have made an impact on society in ways similar to Mark Twain, who, of course, was known as a humorist in his day. And you may remember that... Stewart, who's 59, wow, it's hard to believe he's 59 already, he was on Comedy Central for 16 years, and he stepped away in 2015, has been spending a lot of time doing filmmaking and other stuff connected with his social activism, and according to the president of the Kennedy Center, for more than three decades, Jon Stewart has brightened our lives and challenged our minds as he delivers current events and social satire with his trademark wit and wisdom. All right. Just have to mention, by the way, that the prize was also given to Bill Cosby back in 2009. But to be fair to the Kennedy Center people, they did rescind it in 2018.
Okay. So Cosby got a lot of like honorary degrees and things like that.
Sure.
And,
yeah.
But most of those have been rescinded also.
So. Yeah.
Yep. So Elon Musk Elon Musk has a brain chip firm called Neuralink.
Yeah.
They want to put chips in your brains.
Finally. Yeah, I was wondering when he'd get to it.
Not through the vaccines either.
No, okay. This is the old fashioned way.
They're working now on trying to get clinical trials in humans.
Oh, wow.
So
yeah. So that Borg on the Next Generation, that was not science. That was not science fiction. That was science prediction.
Yeah, well, kind of bad timing because one of his cars like killed a couple people not too long ago. One of his self-driving cars.
Well, maybe that was the point.
Yeah, they deserve to die, Dave.
Yeah, yeah, right. So we can make humans to do that too.
I don't think I'd let Elon Musk put a...
Just relax. Let the hooks do their work.
Wow.
You and I are going to be so unmodified. It's going to be horrible.
We're going to be like freaks. Everybody else will look like just gorgeous because they'll have all these attachments and fixes and, you know, extra arms.
Right. And there we'll be with our slow brains and not connected to anything.
They'll be rolling their eyes at us.
Yeah. Oh, well.
It's like now when when you're behind somebody in line and they write a check, you know. It's like, oh, come on.
What are you trying to prove?
What is this? Like,
what are you, Henry David Thoreau? So pretentious.
So Meatloaf died last night.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw Meatloaf live back in his heyday. During the
I love Meatloaf.
Yeah.
Some peas on the side.
Well, it's cold now. So.
Yeah, cold Meatloaf. Yeah. But,
no, I saw him in, it was probably 77, 78
sure.
in the Twin Cities during the Bat Out of Hell thing. But it was a terrible concert. I mean, it wasn't really a concert. It was more of like a theatrical thing. I mean, it was very choreographed and staged.
Proto-Trump.
Yeah. So, I mean, I was really, you know, we walked out
of
there.
He was delicious in Rocky Horror Picture Show, by the way.
I loved him in Rocky Horror. I just watched his song, Hot Patootie, this morning when I was getting ready for the show. But it was a disappointing concert. But, I mean, he had a great voice. I mean, he was friends with Trump. He was on Trump's show.
Of course he was.
In, 2011 or something.
Back in the old times.
They had like a bunch of, guys like him who were kind of, ex-rock stars and ex-singers.
Yeah. Known for being known.
Who are like, who were, at that point on the D list or C list or something. Yeah. But
Ozzy ever on there?
Could be.
Ozzy Osbourne. Yeah. He was on a lot of stuff.
But apparently he he encouraged Trump to run for president back then. So during the the headline said that. The story actually said Trump asked him, "Do you think I should run for president?" And Meatloaf said, "Yeah, sure."
He didn't projectile vomit, so Trump thought sure.
Well, he kind of turned into a Republican toward the end of his life. He might have died from COVID. I'm not sure if been confirmed. But and if he was like a hardcore, he probably wasn't vaccinated. But we don't know that. So
yeah.
Also, Louis Anderson died, comedian.
Did he?
Yeah, I liked Louis.
I did not know that.
He just died last night too.
Last night. I heard he was unwell.
Yeah, he had cancer, but he was sweet. I always liked him. But he was from St. Paul, so of course you gotta like the Minnesota guys.
Oh, Anderson, yeah, of course. There was a person who died this week that I thought was really interesting. I'd never heard of before. They're different from the people you're describing. It's this guy whose name is Chris Dickerson, and he was he won the award in 1970. Mr. America, back in the day, they had Miss America, and everybody knows about that and how, sexist and stereotypical that was. But they had an award or a competition called Mr. America, too. And Mr. America was all about, beefy and
bodybuilding
and stuff.
Yeah.
And what was interesting about him was that he was a black man, And he was the first black man to ever win Mr. America competition. This was 1970. And on top of that, and this was known in the circles that he sort of ran in, he was also gay.
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a very unusual win. And he passed away just, he was 82. And he was one of the first black men he was the first black man to win the Mr. Universe competition. And so it was bizarre. It was just, in one respect, it was like Miss America because it had this sort of unbelievable, you know, image of like the perfect mm-hmm. you know, representation of that gender, right?
Sure.
But it was also considered odd in those days. I mean, bodybuilding was not yet quite a sport. People didn't do that to the same extent. And in fact, I think it probably was a token of male privilege in some respects that men didn't worry that much about whether they were flabby and out of shape because, you know, you were going to get a woman anyway because that's just the way things worked, you know. Somebody for everybody. I don't have to look good or dress well or smell nice or be pleasant or anything like that because it's all set up for me, right? But so the fact that he was a gay man may have had something to do with his intense interest in trying to be an attractive person. Who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But he said that it was a there had been papers published about him and books about him and so on that have been written just because he was very classy and dignified and so on. And he had an advantage too. He had taken ballet lessons.
We knew. Oh, really? Young.
So.
Nice.
It's unlikely that many of the other Mr. Americas had done that. so that made him a very graceful present. So anyway, so his name was Chris Dickerson, and he passed away, the black gay man who became Mr. America
okay.
in 1970. So,
I think The Rock's dad was the actor, the Dwayne Johnson. I think I think his dad was a, I don't know if he was a Mr. America, but he was one like a big-time bodybuilder,
So,
if I remember right. Maryland man in Charles County, wherever that is, had passed away, and the authorities came and they discovered that. You know, came and did a wellness check on him. They found that the man passed away in his home, and they also found more than 100 snakes inside the home.
Cool.
It says venomous and non-venomous.
Yeah, you never know what you're going to find. Walk through that door.
Can I keep these?
Yeah, that's my biggest worry. You know, I don't want to pass away and have people find my 100 snakes. That would be
that'd be bad. I know. Well, I mean, you know, I've got stuff and I have to explain it. I mean, there's, you know, most of my stuff has an explanation of why I've got. It's like weird stuff.
It's a far-fetched explanation, but it's an explanation.
So, but I wouldn't be around to explain it, you know.
Yeah.
So they would just, you know.
Well, I told you, this is the thing about my stuff. You know, I'm not afraid of dying, but on the other hand, I don't want my stuff to be, like, judged harshly by others. No one will love it as much as me.
So yeah, exactly.
I feel like I want to take my stuff and, like, put it somewhere.
That's
you know,
what I mean.
Like a pyramid.
It'll be out of context. Yeah. A pyramid would be perfect.
Yeah. Look at this. This sums up my life. No, yeah. don't fritter it away. Don't put your fingers on it.
A little video
you'll
screen.
Never get it.
A little video screen where you're lecturing people to stay away from your stuff.
don't touch my stuff.
A little close there.
Yeah, exactly.
Don't step over the line.
Yeah, exactly.
Scientists have found a gecko trapped in amber, almost perfectly preserved after 54 million years.
Right. It's trying to sell insurance.
Exactly. speaking of selling things, this is so funny. I needed a new toaster because I've essentially like thrown out everything in my life and I've started my life over.
Wow, I did not realize that.
Pretty
You're
much.
Born again.
I'm yeah.
Toaster wise.
Clean slate.
Very good. Excellent.
So I needed a toaster and
hallelujah.
And the Menards flyer came the other day and it was like God was moving in my direction because they had a cheap ass toaster for $7.
That's pretty cheap.
That's really cheap. It's probably going to like burn my house down, but it was
what's wrong with this toaster?
Did you ever see Arrested Development where they had the deep fryer?
No.
That just would like burn everybody and spray hot oil on everybody. I'm sure that's what this will be. But
okay.
It came with a fork to get the toast out, though. So that was nice.
Fork supplies extra. Yeah, right.
So I rush out to Menards,
yeah,
and not to do a commercial for them or anything, but
yeah,
but then I got my $7 toaster and I'm checking out, and the person scans it and she says, "Do you want the extended warranty with this?"
It's like getting a warranty on a stick of gum or something. You know, like, I'll just buy another.
It'll be $25.
Yeah, you
know?
Yeah, right.
Like, no, I think I'll pass on that.
Jeez. So how many pieces of toast can you make at one time? Is it
it's
just,
only a two hole.
It's a two seater. Okay.
Yeah,
okay.
Two seater. No, that's the outhouse I bought yeah, while right. I was out there. Do you want the extended warranty?
They got to say it. Their job depends on it.
We drove through Culver's last night, and my friend ordered a burger, and the disembodied voice on the speaker said, sure, "We recommend you get a double." What do you recommend? Are you tracking how hungry I am now?
Top doctors tell us you can't kill yourself with only one burger. So you really probably want to.
Your blood's like still flowing through
yeah,
your artery.
So that's not going to work.
But like the person at Culver's is recommending stuff now.
Well, they're your lifestyle specialists. You're into your burger lifestyle. You might as well go all the way.
Yeah, and the Mountain Dew was a good year. We recommend you get the large of that.
Yeah, basically. Wow.
See, I don't know how to.
I've never had anyone sell me quite that way at a place before. Maybe Culver's is just the beginning of the curve here. I don't know.
Yeah, it could be. So I think it was like the little perfect person who was working there who was trying to you know
brownie points.
Brownie points, like teacher, we have a test scheduled today, kind of person. Yeah. You know, Mr. Culver.
Yeah,
she didn't upsell over
You're
there.
You're assistant manager material, no doubt about it.
Here's your hat.
Did you hear this story? I felt a little bad about this. The story about the AV Club. Did you hear that?
The
Chicago-based pop culture website. And, of course, they were affiliated with The Onion, which used to be based here in Madison, Wisconsin. I remember when they got started. And they were told that they had to move to L.A., where all the action was, and leave their Chicago home. And Tuesday of this week, seven people on the staff said, no, thank you. Basically, it was one of those cases where it was taken over by somebody who took over. You know, there was like various levels of corporate merger and acquisition. And they said, oh, no, you're going to leave. And they said, no, I think we'll just stay here. So LA can go be LA. So good for them.
Yeah. M&M's are upgrading the image of their little cartoon people, their little M's. What's a single M&M? Just
an M.
An M.
Yeah.
So, and they're one of them had, I didn't realize this, had white go-go boots on. So good for fighting robots. I think.
That was Andy M.
Yeah. that was Magnus the M.
Magnus, yes, Magnus robot fighter.
But now she's gonna wear sneakers. So they're kind of like
I don't like the M's because they always seem to center their advertisement around cannibalism.
I know. Yeah.
I was like, no, I don't want a talking M. I'm going to eat that thing. I don't want to have to think to myself.
I feel the same way. I feel exactly the same.
Yeah, it's like Alice in Wonderland. You know, pudding, Alice pudding. Now you know, cut the pudding. Yeah. No, I don't want. I just you don't eat things you've been introduced to. I'm sorry.
Well, I love this corporate speak on the announcement. It says, I think we all win when we see more women in leading roles. So I'm happy to take the part of the supportive friend when they succeed. The green M&M, who will now sport a pair of sneakers rather than the usual go-go boots, said on the promotional site.
Well, that will make all the difference. It's a real blow.
Come a long
for
way,
equality.
Baby.
Actually, I do have a story about gender gaps here. It's a weird segue, but I saw this in the New York Times this week. It was a little sidebar about the U.S. Supreme Court. And, you know, we now have, there have been now five female justices living and unfortunately dead. And the current court, of course, has three women on it. And there are a plethora of women judges across the federal court system. But here's an interesting and kind of appalling figure. It was data compiled by Kimberly Strawbridge Robinson of Bloomberg Law. And they discovered that it, in terms of arguing before the Supreme Court, the percentage of arguments made by women in the term that just ended in June was only 18%. And the year before, the figure was 13%. And over the last decade, the percentage of female lawyers representing arguments to the court was somewhere between 12 and 20%. And the thing that's really striking is the figures are similar to the ones at issue in the arguments that former Justice Ginsburg made back in 1978. one of the things that was fascinating back in the day is they also the state also allowed women to just opt out of jury service, and most of them did because, of course, they figured, well, you know, they've got other things to do, apparently. Which resulted back in the 70s, the jury pool was about 85% male. And, of course, that's about what the, according to these numbers, about what the percentages of lawyers arguing before the court is as well.
Hmm.
So, some things seem to be pretty much the same for 50 years or so. Longer. January is typically a slow month for donations to the Dane County Humane Society, but the recent passing, of course, of Betty White, who died on December 31st, just a few weeks before her 100th birthday, led a lot of people to decide to donate. So Dane County Humane Society reported 700 donations since Betty White passed away.
Really?
With more than 600 came just this Monday of this week. And Lisa Bernard, who's the nonprofit's public relations coordinator to the organization, had received more than $21,000 online in White's honor. She says, the fact that we have this event happening has been just amazing, just incredible. So,
wow, that's really cool.
Something nice.
It's amazing how like a celebrity death can trigger something like that. Just here in Madison, I mean, totally unrelated, really. And
we love our celebrities.
We do. Is there nothing they can't do?
Apparently they make us better people.
Is that it? Make us open our wallets and help those less fortunate than
ourselves.
Yes,
exactly. So.
Goodbye, friends. I'll miss you. Good riddance to them. Now Zoidberg is the popular one.
Yes, yes. Let's all talk to Zoidberg.
Oh, let's.
All right, time to declare the weekend. Enjoy the weekend. It's going to be 75 and sunny out there.
Yeah, enjoy it despite everything.
We'll figure it out. We'll get through this.
Oh, you bet.
It's Wisconsin. We used to be tough.
Yeah.
Yeah, we aren't anymore. But
We're whining about
it. No, we just whine.
People won't kiss my white butt.
Don't hurt my feelings. All right, stick around. The Kiosk is next. After that, Who Cooks For You with The Real Jaguar. Amy Goodman, Democracy Now!, Labor Radio, Blues, Friday On My Mind, all kinds of great stuff here on your favorite radio station, WORT. Pants, great to see you again.
You too, bud.
Have a good weekend and a good week.
Bye. Thumbs up.
Talk to you next week. Bye, everybody. It's 2 o'clock. You're listening to WORT 89.9 FM, Madison. Put the hot pants on.